Well, good morning, y'all. It's good to be back with you. We are in the middle of a series today called The Story of God. And we're really taking a historical perspective on how God has revealed himself throughout history in an attempt to try to understand better who he is, his character, what we can know about him, what we can't know about him. And really how mankind has experienced the presence of God throughout history. And so today I want to close out the Old Testament period. And, you know, maybe as you've gone through the Old Testament, as we've done this, maybe you're coming away going, you know, I was really expecting to have this image of God as this angry God, this judgmental God who is hell-bent on destruction. And well, believe me, there's plenty of that in the Old Testament. You know, when you read it from a different perspective and you kind of go through the Bible as we've gone through so far, I really get the distinct impression that somehow God just really likes us. And even though mankind, have hurt the heart of God time after time, rejecting him to the point that God, we see it in the scriptures, that God was ready to walk away from us so many times. For whatever reason, he makes a decision to stick it out. He makes a decision to stick with us and to, you know, make us feel his presence and his love throughout history. There is a word, the Old Testament was written in the Hebrew language, so we've been dealing a lot with the Hebrew, and there's a word in Hebrew, and the word is kavod. And this word is used to describe the indescribable, which is the visible manifestation of the presence of God. Whenever the invisible God becomes visible, and whenever the omnipresence of God becomes localized, in other words, that he decides to limit himself to the physical point and time and space, to a place, that's kavod. And this word, as it's translated into our English Bibles, is the phrase, the glory. So this would come into our text if it were to say, for instance, that the glory of God filled this place. It would be the kavod of God has filled this place. Sometime after the writing of the Old Testament, Jewish scholars actually took it to a next level in trying to describe the indescribable, this phenomenon, by calling it the Shekinah glory. And while the word Shekinah, I want to be clear, the word Shekinah does not appear anywhere in the scriptures, it is an incredibly descriptive phrase that I love because it really kind of hits the nail on the head, because what it does is it describes the glory of God is dwelling among us. It has this idea that the presence of God is being experienced right here in our midst. And so when God appeared to Moses on Mount Sinai, for example, that was the Shekinah glory. When God appears in a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night to lead the Israelites into the promised land, that was the Shekinah glory of God. And when God instructed the Israelites to build a tabernacle that Greg talked about last week, and it was the Shekinah glory that filled the courtyard of the tabernacle. And so there's this incredible thing where even though there's this long history of mankind pushing God away, rejecting God over and over and over again, there is this weird phenomenon that God really wants to be with us. That God really wants to dwell among us. It's unfathomable, really. And so now as we transition from the temporary that we talked about last week in the form of the tabernacle, which was the, you know, kind of a glorified tent of worship, we now go into the permanent and we have this huge upgrade, which is the Temple of Solomon. A temple so remarkable, in fact, that it would be a place where even God would be proud to reside, says King Solomon, who had it built. And he built it on behalf of his father, David. So this temple, the structure, the architecture, the finishes it took to construct was staggering. It was an estimated 30,000 workers that it took to build this thing, and over $600 million by today's standards was what the cost was. It was located right in Jerusalem, right in the heart of the Promised Land, but it was considered to be the permanent place of God. In 1 Kings chapter 8, it says, when the priests withdrew from the holy place, the cloud filled the temple of the Lord, and the priests could not perform their service because of the cloud, for the glory of the Lord, the Kavod, filled his temple. Then Solomon said, I have indeed built a magnificent temple for you, O God, a place where you can dwell forever. I love this because you kind of like see King Solomon's right quite pleased with what he has accomplished, even to the point that, you know, he feels like God should feel special, like being in this place. But the whole point of it is they wanted a place where God would come and he would dwell forever. A place where people could always know where to find God. If you ever need him, he's over there in the temple. Right? There's just one problem with that. God cannot be contained. He cannot be contained by anyone. He cannot be contained by any room, no matter how swanky the room may be. Well, we like the idea of this Shekinah glory because we'd love to be able to have God, you know, have some manifestation right here in front of us where we could physically see him. But is it possible that we really want that because we kind of want to keep tabs on God? We kind of want to know where he is because it's a little eerie to think that when we're out there doing our own thing and living the way we want to live, that maybe God's watching, that he's always present is a little freaky deaky, isn't it? What we're going to find is God cannot be contained by any room, but he can also not be contained by any little box that we try to put him in. Because Lord knows, we try to limit God. We try to contain God, but our God is way bigger than that. I think that describes the tension that is in each one of us, where there's the tension between us wanting freedom. We want to be able to do what we want to do. And at the same time, we want to have this closeness to God. I would think that if I were to go around the room and ask everyone, I think everybody would say, yeah, I want to be close to God. I would go out on a limb this morning and say that's why you're probably here this morning. You want to feel close to God. And whether you've been a Christian all your life or whether you've just starting on your journey, you want to experience God's presence in your life. But is it possible that you want God's presence, but you just don't want too much of it? Is it possible you want just enough to be wowed, but not enough to force change? Just enough so that you know that he's there and there's this like security blanket for when you need him, but don't want to feel uncomfortable. Don't want to get all crazy with this Christian thing. Don't want to cramp my style. It also seems that there was this tension in the character of God whereby he's like this transcendent God, right? He's the creator God. He's all-powerful, and he is omnipresent, meaning that he really is everywhere. He transcends all space and time, and yet we have seen this is a God who wants to get personal. This is a God who wants to be with us. His Shekinah glory, the presence of God, is this overwhelming desire to abide in the presence of man, and time after time, we see that play out in the history of the Old Testament. But eventually, something happens. There comes a point where everything changes. The evil nature of the Israelites gets even worse. And they've pushed God to the edge for this one last time. And God finally says, you know what? Enough is enough. I've been doing enough hand-holding with these people, and for the first time in a long time, we see the Shekinah glory of God that has been going on for hundreds of years. his physical presence with the people of Israel, spanning from generation to generation, all of a sudden just stops. In Ezekiel, the Israelites have proven that in spite of God pursuing them with his love, as he has tenaciously, they have showed their tenaciousness in rejecting him. And so just before the temple is destroyed by the Babylonians in 586 BC, God leaves the building. He leaves the building. The prophet Ezekiel shares this incredible vision with us of what he saw. In Ezekiel chapter 10, he says, "The cherubim were standing at the south end of the temple, and the cloud of the glory filled the inner courtyard, and the glory of the Lord rose up above the cherubim and went over to the entrance of the temple." So we have this image that Ezekiel is painting for us, that the glory of God is getting up and getting ready to leave the house. The temple was filled with this cloud of glory, and the courtyard glowed brightly with the glory of the Lord, the Kavod. The moving wings of the cherubim sounded like the voice of God Almighty, and they heard it even in the outer courtyard. And then the glory of the Lord moved out away from the temple and hovered over it. Here we have an image of God leaving the temple. "And as I watched, the cherubim flew with their wheels to the east gate of the Lord's temple, and the glory of God of Israel hovered above them as he left." I can't help but get some of the imagery of Genesis here, where you have, you know, Adam and Eve being kicked out of the garden. If you remember that, you know, it was the east gate that the cherubim were there standing guard with the flaming swords, making sure that, you know, nobody was let back in. It certainly feels like this is a permanent situation where God is leaving. The cherubim are in place. They're at the east gate where God entered and exited from in the temple. And then in chapter 44, it sure seems permanent, because he says, "And then he brought me back the way of the gate of the outward sanctuary, which looks out to the east, and it was shut. And then the Lord said, 'This gate will be shut. It will not be opened, and no man shall enter in by it.'" This is important because this is the last instance that we have in the Bible of the Shekinah glory of God. The last time that God manifests himself in some physical way, it appears that God has left the building. This beautiful temple that Solomon built where God should dwell forever, God's now getting on up and moving on out. Never again will God reveal himself in this way for the rest of history. In this moment, everything changes. It is almost as if man has rejected God so much that we finally got what we asked for. That God finally has had enough. And so he removes his physical presence and says, "You want to push me away? You want to reject me? All right, yon yon." And now, everything's different. It all gets very quiet out there. When God's physical presence was removed from abiding among the Israelite people, they were finally left to ask the age-old question that you and I are so familiar with. "Oh God, where are you now? Can you even hear my prayers? Are you even up there?" It got real quiet. When you look at the history of the Old Testament, you see the history of the Israelites. Are there any transferable principles for you at all? Can you relate to that, where these Israelites, even though they were in the presence of God, they experienced the presence of God, they continued to reject God, they continued to push him further away? Is there some truth in that for you? That while you'd like to have just enough God to wow you, to make you feel secure in those moments of despair and in desperation, when you cry out in the darkness because you need somebody to hear you, and you cry out to God, you want to make sure he's there, but too much God, that's a little inconvenient for me. It binds me up. It holds me back from the freedom that I want to experience in my life and doing what I want to do. Do you ever reject God? Maybe that's too strong of a word. Let's say, do you ever push God away? Do you ever put him on the back burner and prioritize everything else in the world in front of God? When I think of one of the greatest examples of how God revealed himself in the Old Testament, and when I think of God, who God is, I can't help but think of the encounter that the prophet Elijah had with God. Elijah was going through a desert time, and I'm not going to get into all the ins and outs. It's a very long story. I'm going to skip kind of to the end of the story where Elijah is absolutely tired. I mean, this is a strong person of faith. He's going through a desert time. His faith is worn. He is tired in his soul. And Elijah finally sits down and he says, Lord, I have had enough. I give up. Just let me die now. Have you ever felt like that? Where you just come to the end of your rope and you say, Lord, I don't think I can take one more thing. One more thing, and I'm just going to break in two. Well, in this moment, in 1 Kings chapter 19, the word of the Lord, it says, came to Elijah, and God asked Elijah, hey, what are you doing here? It's an interesting question, isn't it? Have you ever asked yourself that? Why am I here? What's the meaning of it all? Have I lost perspective about who I am and what's important in life? I think God is asking because he wants Elijah to focus in on the bigger picture. Hey, what's your purpose? Why are you here? Stay focused. Now, it seems to me like Elijah maybe misses the point here at first because he starts into this speech that gets a little whiny. He starts talking about his desert time and he says, well, God, I've been working so hard for you. I've been nothing but faithful. No one's listening to me. It's not fair. They've killed all the other prophets and now they're trying to kill me too. And Elijah's on the run and you get it. Like, he's really tired. But I would say that you can always tell when you're experiencing a loss of passion and purpose in our lives, because when that happens, we get dry, we tend to get a little whiny, don't we? Get a little victim-y, say stuff like, it's not fair, they just don't listen to me. I would maintain that the issue in these desert times is not a loss of passion for the things of life, but instead, it's an absence of experiencing the presence of God in our lives. To live every day with the knowledge that there is something more to this life, something out there that is bigger than we are. To get our eyes up beyond the daily grind of the stuff that we go through day in and day out and have something that gives us a sense of purpose or passion. Well, God must have known that Elijah needed a little inspiration because he speaks to Elijah in verse 11 and he says, all right, go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass you by. Wow. What an incredible opportunity here. The Shekinah glory of God is about to happen right in front of him. Elijah is finally going to get to see God, or maybe even face to face. Elijah had to be so pumped, full of questions, like, I wonder what he looks like. Does he have that kind of long beard like Moses? Is he kind of just like this glowing light thing? What is he like? Whatever it is, Elijah steps out onto the mountain and he waits to be wowed. And it says in 1 Kings 19, when he steps out into the mountain, there was this great and powerful wind that tore the mountain apart and shattered rocks. I can't even imagine these rocks shattering everywhere. And I'm sure that Elijah thinks, this is God here now. But it says the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, there was an earthquake. Everything was shaken. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. So God's doing all these big and wonderful things, but he has not yet revealed himself. He's not yet showed himself who he is. He wasn't in any of it. And then, after all this big stuff, it's like a hush falls across the whole world. And there came a gentle whisper. And Elijah knew this was it. He was standing in the presence of God. I love that image of God. God finally has Elijah's attention. And he asks him one more time, "Hey, Elijah, why are you here? What are you doing?" And with that, Elijah has this sense of renewed passion as a man who has just been in the presence of God, and he gets up and he moves on to his next mission. Because all of a sudden, Elijah was able to see again a perspective, his life in connection with God, who he is within the mission of God. You know, we look for God in all the wrong places. We want the big. We want wow. We want the Shekinah glory to appear right in front of us and to set up camp right here in the auditorium. We want God to make it so easy for us. But you know what? He did that for hundreds of years for the Israelites, and it just didn't work, did it? Hundreds of years, his presence was right there in their midst, and yet they continued to reject him. So what makes us believe we'd be any different? That if God showed himself to us, if there was some miracle that we could see, then we'd believe. Really? You think it'd change anything? Or be just a good story? If you want to get out of the desert, if you're having a desert experience, if you're tired of trudging through the sand day in and day out, then it is time just to stop. Stop trying to do it on your own and experience the presence of God in your life. To allow yourself to hear the still small voice, the gentle whisper of God say to you, "Hey, what are you doing here? What is your life about? How long has it been since you've just stopped and you have been by yourself? No TV, no kids, no books, no radio, and you just, you and God. Can you even think back to that day? When's the last time you were able just to stop and watch the sun slowly set into the western sky? Or sat and just started your day with a prayer? Are you able to sit in a moment for any length of time at all? Do you really think that you can experience the presence of God in the craziness of your drivenness, in the chaos of your daily grind? I think we all have a God-sized void in our lives that we try to fill with stuff. And we look for God in all the wrong places. I know for me, I look for God in the next big deal in my career. Other people look for God in chasing the excitement of life, stuff to do. Some people try to fill that void with stuff of money and anything that we can find that will fit inside that God-sized void. But he's not there. He's not in any of the big stuff. It's in those quiet moments when we finally shut up long enough and we stop long enough that you can hear the gentle whisper of God. I think that far too many of us know a lot about God, but very few of us ever experience the presence of God. There have to be safe places in all of our lives where we can retreat and have these quiet moments to regain that spiritual passion that causes us to live differently, passionately. You know, this last year, I went through one of those desert experiences in my own life. And the scary thing is, it didn't really take much for me to get there. Like, the daily grind got a little more hectic. I got a little busier. Few things didn't go my way. And then, boom, I was in it. And the funny thing is, when you get in like a desert time like that, at first you kind of look around and you go, well, this isn't a bad place. You know, you kind of feel victim-y and you feel sorry for yourself and you're kind of trudging around through the sand and going through it. But after a while, you lose perspective and you can get stuck there pretty easily. And without even knowing it, you can get into this downward spiral that can get out of control. It's only when we stop struggling long enough. It's only when we can shut up, sit still, put our phones away, and hear the still small voice of God asking you in a gentle whisper, what are you doing here? What is your life about? And suddenly we get it. When we get it, we really get it. You feel like life is different than anything you've ever experienced. And you know that this is the way life was meant to be lived. And it's only in the presence of God that we can actually finish the journey of this life strong. Even though God left the temple that day, the Bible says that we are now the temple of God. And that God has continued in his desire to abide in us. But this time he wants to live in our lives. He wants to turn our hearts into the Holy of Holies, the place where we can meet him. It's hard when you don't have that physical manifestation of God like they had, that it takes so much faith to get through and to scrape through. Times in the darkness when we ask, oh God, where are you now? But in the moments that we can be still and know that he is God, those are the moments we live for. To wake up every day in the presence of God, and to know that he wants to be with us, he wants to love us, he wants to lead us. But here's the catch. We have to want to follow. We have to allow him entrance into our hearts. God will not be contained and we cannot put him in some little box that we take out every now and then and play with. He's way bigger than that. He's a God that demands everything from us.